We put it on the website.
Okay.
It's up to you.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for coming. All right. Thanks, everyone, for showing up. I'm actually here. So, Shechianu v'Kimonu v'Higiyanu. And thank you very much for me and Redder for sponsoring refreshments. I just lost all the names. There's a lot of cholim in the community. So I emailed out all the names. Please add them to your list. Please daven. Especially Asaf Asher Ben Shifra, my friend's brother, recently diagnosed cancer. And so he needs our prayers. And there's a lot of cholim in the community. That's where our learning is going to be in the Chusav. If you want to get up and get something to the side, I'm sure Rav Silber won't mind, in the middle, whatever. And he's going to leave early, so I'm just going to turn it right over to him. Thank you very much. Any other announcements afterwards? Thank you.
All right. Good evening, everyone. All right, so first of all, as Reb Chaim mentioned, we should really just have in mind that our learning should provide an aliyah for should provide a refuah shalema for kol chole Yisrael. All right, so we focused last time a little bit on some of the topics concerning halach ma'anya, specifically how we're supposed to understand this very strange paragraph. The reason I use the word strange is because if you look at it just in the flow of the Haggadah, as we spent an hour focusing on last time, it doesn't really seem to fit. So what I'd like to do this time is actually back up a little bit more. If you take a look at number one on your sheet, you'll find what we call the Simane HaSeder. What are the Simane HaSeder? You don't have to sing it, right? What are the Simane HaSeder in essence? Right? It's the order of the Seder, right? So again, if we run through them quickly, Kadesh is Kiddush, Urchatz, which is we'll call it the symbolic washing, Karpas, the vegetable and salt water, Yachatz, breaking of the middle matzah, Magid, the telling over of the story, Rachza, which is washing for Hamotzi, Motzi, which is the bracha of Hamotzi on matzah, Matzah, which represents the bracha of Alachilas Matzah, because remember at the Seder night, we make two brachos over matzah, Maror is Maror, Korech, the sandwich, right, the Hillel sandwich, Shulchan Orech, which is the meal, Tzofun, Afikomen, good, it's called Tzofun, this is our topic of our shiur last night, right, it's called Tzofun because ultimately we wrap the Afikomen, Barech is Birkas HaMazon, benching, Hallel, and Nirtza, conclusion, right, Nirtza is not really anything you actually do in the Seder, rather Nirtza just simply means it's come to an end, it's done. It's done. Literally, Nirtza means it should be accepted before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. So, let's take a step back. So, interestingly enough, and I'm sure if we went around, there are different minhagim. People have different minhagim, different customs, in terms of what they do with the Simane HaSeder. So, some people either say or sing the Simane HaSeder at the beginning of the Seder. Some have, like, for example, in my family, we have an interesting custom that we sing the Simane HaSeder before each stage of the Haggadah, before each stage of the Seder. So, before Kadesh, we do it. Before Urchatz, we do it. Before Karpas, you get the point. Right? At each stage, we say all of the Simane HaSeder. Others only recite the particular Simon that is appropriate for the stage of the Seder that we are up to. But if you take a look at number two, what's interesting is the following. This is from a Haggadah called Otzer Mefarshei HaHaggadah, and he has a beautiful or interesting explanation about all this. He writes in the right-hand side paragraph, Simane HaSeder Miskinu Al Yedei Rabosinu HaRishonim. So we know the Haggadah that we have today is not the Haggadah that the Jewish people always use. The Haggadah is the Haggadah evolved over time. For example, there was always some form of Haggadah. But during the times of the first Beis HaMikdash, it looked a particular way. During the times of the second Beis HaMikdash, it looked a different way. And certainly post-Beis HaMikdash, now in the current exile that we are in, a lot of things have been added to the Haggadah. So for example, all of the songs at the end, right? Adir hu, kilo na'eh, kilo ya'eh, echad miyodea, chagadya. Those are all subsequent add-ons. Those are also, the reason why it's important to know is because technically speaking, you don't have to say them. So if it's very late and a person feels that, you know what, I'm just, although they're the most well-known songs, but they're really add-ons. They're not an integral part of the Haggadah. They each have a deeper meaning, symbolism, and really metaphorical value, but they're not part and parcel of the Seder. See, right here is something amazing. Simane HaSeder, Niskinu Ayedei Rabusina HaRishonim. So the truth is, and I mentioned this in the Wednesday night shiur as well, One of the fascinating parts about the Haggadah is, oh, thank you very much, thank you, is when you analyze the history of the Haggadah, when you try to understand where everything came from. Most of the Haggadah came from where? The Gemara. Right, the Gemara. Right? Really, most of the Haggadah is taken straight out of the Gemara, a couple of Midrashim thrown in there, aside from the subsequent songs. What's interesting over here is, he writes this Simani HaSeder, this Kadesh Urchatz Kar Pasach. Now, by the way, before we go on, what's unique about number one? What's unique about the Simani HaSeder? I'm going to give you a little Pesach homework. It doesn't include everything. Right? For example, what's noticeably missing from number one? Excellent. Arba Kosos, excellent. Four cups. What else? Although we have one of them, we have Kadesh, right? What else is missing? What other mitzvah of the Laila of the night? Right? So Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim you kind of have with Magid. Kosher Eliyahu, good. We're missing not only the four cups, but the fifth one as well. What else? Right. The Rabbi Gamliel piece, good. What else? One of the things we do at night is missing. One of the behaviors. Heseba, reclining. Sorry, that's not our topic for tonight, but it's something for you to ponder over the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours that your Seder takes, however long it is. But it's interesting that clearly some things were included and some things were omitted. And if there's one thing that we know about any Jewish text is that it's never random. There's always a reason. So if Heseba is missing, if Dalet Kosos are missing, all right, you'll get back to me after Pesach why they're not there. In any event, so in number 2 years, from a historical perspective, Simani HaSeder Niskinu Ayedei Rav Sinai HaRishonim. When were these Simanim created? By the Rishonim. When we speak about the Rishonim, we are generally talking about, we'll call it 11th and 12th century. 10th, 11th, 12th century. So times of Rashi, the Tosafists, so the 1100s, 1200s. So really we're talking about something that is close to 1,000 years old, which clearly puts us after the close of the Talmud, right? After the close of the Gemara, obviously after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, 1,000 years ago these were created. So of course the next question is, right? Okay. I'll tell you this one. The next question is, why? Right? Well, I mean, you always have to scratch your head and ask yourself, if something wasn't done way, way, way back, why did the rabbis, why did the Rishonim feel the need to introduce it? Right? What was wrong with the system we had before? So he gives a very interesting explanation. He says, Leman lo yishane adam beseder tikun ha-pesach. So the first reason we have the Simani HaSeder is why? In order that you should remember the order of the Seder. Now what does this mean? Take a step back. So, you know, if there are two things that you find in abundance in virtually every Jewish home, they are our food. Right? I guess I'm the one who's off tonight. Okay, I would have said benchers and haggadahs. Right? Benchers and haggadahs. Right? Everybody has, yet. You have a drawer filled with benchers and haggadahs. And generally, there are a whole bunch of haggadahs, whether it's the Maxwell House haggadah or this haggadah or that one. Nobody uses it, but it's kind of just there. So you have to understand, in the days before the proliferation of printed material, conducting a Seder is not a simple thing. Why? Because there is a lot going on. There's a lot going on. There are a lot of different pieces that unfold over the course of the evening. Therefore, 1,000 years ago, the rabbis came along and said, you know what? We essentially need to create a Seder mnemonic. We need to create a vehicle through which people, even if they don't have the printed text of the Haggadah, will know what to do, when to do it, in the proper sequence and order. That gives birth, in number one, to the Simani HaSeder. Because remember, when it comes to the Haggadah, to be honest, you don't have to say every single word of the Haggadah in order to go ahead and fulfill the obligations of the night. In fact, again, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, the Pesach Seder, you know, is the victim of the law of diminishing returns. You know, where the more you kind of try to read in the Haggadah, the less impactful the experience seems to be. So sometimes less is more. That if you go ahead and you focus on a couple of things of the Haggadah, even if you end up skipping some of the other paragraphs, certain things you can't skip, but certain things that you can. So we're not as concerned that a person is going to say every single pasuk, a person is going to recall every single medrash, but in number one gives us the major staples of the Seder. So that even if you don't have the Haggadah, it's easy enough to remember these things, especially if you set it to a tune. That way we know the order, the proper order of the Seder will be preserved. That's one approach. If you take a look at number six in the footnotes, he says something very interesting. He quotes, if you look three lines into number six, Yesh mi shekasav tam nosaf. There are others who want to advance another reason. Lefi shekol davar shebikdusha tsarich hazmana. Now what does that mean? Kol davar shebikdusha tsarich hazmana. What would you say? Sorry?
Invitation.
Right. So hazmana we could translate as invitation, which actually fits in very beautifully to like our halach ma'an yeshir from last time. What else? Hazmana could also mean preparation. So we come across here an incredible, incredible idea that every holy event requires preparation. If I were to ask you what that means, what would you say? So it could be we have this concept of shloshim yom kodem achag, good. What else can it mean? But what does it mean on a practical level? What's the ideal that's being expressed here? I'm sorry? The kavana. Let's go with that word for just a moment. Let's take one more step back. In life, how do you differentiate between the things that are important and the things that are unimportant? How much time you set aside for a particular life endeavor? Things that are not so important, right? We generally just do on the spur of the moment, whatever. It's not a big deal. And if it turns out okay, fine. If it doesn't, it's okay also. Things that are important always require preparation. You know, it's interesting. The Shulchan Aruch brings down, he says that before you daven in the morning, he says, and this is true, by the way, whether a person's davening in shul or they're davening at home, right? Or davening a lot or a little. The Shulchan Aruch says this person is supposed to get dressed. The person is supposed to wash their face. The person is supposed to brush their teeth. God cares about my morning breath. It doesn't care about my morning breath. It doesn't, right? But the answer is no, because if having a rendezvous with God is important, anything that's important by definition requires preparation. If there's one time of the year where that preparation is so difficult to come by, one can make the argument that it's Pesach. Why? Because we are so involved in so many other details prior to Pesach that what usually happens comes the Seder night. Right. Well said. Right? You show up, and if you could stay awake, then mamish, that is the pinnacle of human accomplishment. Right? Forget about getting anything meaningful. I stayed awake for the entire Seder, because the truth is, Pesach is an exceptionally, it has a lot of preparation on the physical level. There's a lot of things we have to do. And the truth is, I'm sure, we're all in the same boat where we say to ourselves, you know what, this year I'm gonna prepare, I'm gonna purchase a new Haggadah, I'm gonna read it ahead of time, I'm gonna come up with all these groundbreaking insights, and mamish, and then what happens? It's called life, right? And you don't get a chance. So here's something amazing. So Chazal understood, and this is part of a much bigger theme, bigger than what we're going to accomplish tonight. How do you know, if you have been a part of a successful Seder? How do you know if you've had a successful Seder experience? How do you measure success? I'm sorry?
It's different for everyone.
Okay, true, it's different for everyone. But there is, remember, in any time you have a halachic obligation, there's always a metric. There's always some way to measure. So, right, I know, how do I fulfill the mitzvah of lulav and etrog? I pick it up in my hands, and I shake it in different directions, I'm yotzi the mitzvah. Right? How do I observe the mitzvah of Shabbos? I do these things, don't do those things. How do you know you fulfilled the mitzvah of the Seder? So excellent. So Rav Soloveitchik advances this theme that Rebecca is saying, that the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim is to learn something new about the Exodus that you never knew before. Good. But even that is referring to one mitzvah. I'm asking the experience. How do you know that you have fulfilled the Pesach Seder experience? So, okay, it could be like the Haggadah says, you feel like you have left. Good. You feel like you experienced, not just talking about some historical event. What else? So I'll tell you something very important. The way you know that you have had a successful Seder experience is if you feel like a changed person. If you feel different at the end of it, and now I'm not talking about fatigue, if you feel different at the end of it, than you felt at the beginning of it, that is a successful Seder experience. And we don't have to further quantify or qualify that. That's it, because you're right. It will mean something different for every person. But a successful Seder is a cathartic, transformative Seder. A successful Seder is where, after those couple of hours, I can't even tell you why, but I feel different. I feel different. I think differently. I look at the world differently. Perhaps I even feel differently about myself. That's a successful Seder. Now, by the way, that's a very tall order, right? It's a very, very, very tall order. But now we understand what's happening over here. If the entire essence of the Seder is to experience this transformative, cathartic event, then of course it requires what? Preparation. Because what transformative life event can you just simply jump right into it and experience it in its totality? If the Seder is going to change me, or say differently, if I'm going to change over the course of the Seder, whatever that change means, it requires preparation. So the rabbis understood, but what do you do about the fact that most people don't have time for that preparation? So look what the rabbis did. They built into the Seder a small unit of preparation. So when you show up to the Seder on the night of Pesach, do you begin the Seder immediately? No, what do you do? What do you do? You sing. I'm not going to sing, right? But right? You go ahead, you're Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz. What are you doing? You are preparing yourself for the evening. It's 10 seconds, 20 seconds, maybe, you know, a minute at most if you sing it a couple of times. You know what? A little bit of preparation is better than no preparation. And the fact that we take the time to prepare before launching into the Seder indicates that the event that we are about to engage in is something of exceptional importance. And the proof to that is, I'm not just going to walk in the house and just make Kiddush, boom, but rather what? We're going to take a couple of moments. And we're going to do our Kaddish. And now we also understand why some have the custom either to recite the Seimani HaSeder over and over and over before each unit, or at least repeat that particular Siman that is associated with that part of the Seder. Why? Preparation. Anything in life that is worth anything in life that is meaningful, requires absolute preparation. In fact, this Sfas Emes, the Ger Rebbe brings down, he says, why do we make a bracha before mitzvos? I kind of gave it away, right? Why do we make a bracha before mitzvos? It's preparation. Right? Do you need to make a bracha before you do a mitzvah? No, you could fulfill the mitzvah even without the bracha. But the bracha says that there's something important that is about to unfold, and I can't just jump right into it. I have to give myself, even if it's just a couple of seconds of preparation. Anything meaningful in life always requires advanced preparation. We should be doing it maybe 30 days before the Yom Tov. But the truth is, life is such that we often maintain manic schedules. So even if you did nothing up until the Seder, a couple of moments, Simone has Seder, proper preparation before a cathartic and transformative evening. In fact, if you look at number 3, the Shulchan Aruch brings down, he says something very interesting. He says, Yiyeh Shulchanu Aruch mi ba'od yom. So interestingly enough, he says that one's table should be set, on Erev Yom Tov already, right? Why? Who cares when your who cares? As long as your table is set by the time it's time for the Seder. So why should the table be set on Erev Yom Tov? The answer? Preparation. Because when you set the table early, what you're saying to yourself and to those around you is you're saying something important is about to occur. And I'm putting myself in the right mindset. You know, it's interesting. Only after I saw this idea that I finally understand something. If you look at many of the Haggadahs, by the Hasidim. So very often Hasidim have all of these Hineni Muchan Umezumans. Right? They have like these little introductory prayers that they say before the performance of a particular mitzvah. So Misnagdim, non-Hasidim generally don't do it. But yet, if you look in the Haggadahs, right? These Hineni Muchan Umezumans are printed in so many Haggadahs. I'm not talking about the Haggadahs with the Hasidic commentaries. So many different Haggadahs. So I always wondered why that is, right? If you don't say it the whole year, why are you doing it Pesach? Because if you understand that Pesach is this transformative, cathartic evening. So maybe I don't prepare enough in general, but on the Seder night, I'm going to go out of my way to make sure to prepare as much as possible. Okay, one other thing I'll just point out to you before we go on to number 4. If you look at number 1, you know, sometimes in order to fully appreciate something, you have to pretend like you're seeing it for the first time. So if you were looking at number one, what jumps out at you? Look at this and pretend you're looking at it for the first time. You've never been to a seder before in your life. Someone tells you, here's the blueprint, here's what we're going to be doing, right, in a week from this Tuesday night. What are your initial thoughts? A lot of stuff. Right. Right. Well said. It's short. Okay. So, good. I mean, the Siman has to say there are short, but it sounds like a lot to do in one evening. Good. What else? A lot of whys. Good. What else? You can imagine you're looking at this for the first time. Somebody showed you this list. In general, when you see a list, what's the first thing you do?
Read it.
Good. I'm sorry. Analyze the order, right? Usually a list means there's a seder, there's an order. So the first question you'd want to ask is, okay, what is the connection between these various things? So let's take a moment to look at the seder, right? So we're going to make Kiddush. What do we do after Kiddush? Right? We do our washing, right? Which you don't do the rest of the year. Then what? Right? Karpas, right? So there are different minhagim. So whether you're using parsley, celery, potatoes, I don't know what else people use.
Lettuce,
okay? Right? So you're going to dip a little bit of that in salt water. Right? Then we're going to break matzahs. Then we're going to talk a lot. Then we're going to wash again. We're going to eat amotzi. We're going to eat mar. We're going to make sandwiches. We're going to eat more matzah. We're going to bench. We're going to say hallel. We're going to sing songs. You see the problem? There doesn't seem to be an order. We're used to, for us it's in order because we're used to doing it. But if you analyze it as if you're seeing it for the first time, it seems absolutely and unequivocally random. Right? Especially in the beginning, you're going from Kiddush to eating potatoes, to breaking matzahs, to talking about the Seder, to making sandwiches. There aren't really even sandwiches. Right? What are we doing? But here's the incredible irony. Yet, this lack of order, how do we term it? What do we call it? What do we call the lack of order? Order. We call the lack of order, we call the total randomness of the night, the Seder. Because one of the major messages, and again, it's not our major theme for tonight, but one of the major messages of Pesach is that what so often looks random to us in the universal sense is part of a perfect divine order. The fact that we can't understand it, the fact that no matter how much we rack our brains, we can't seem to put all of the pieces in the proper sequence, doesn't detract from the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs a perfect world, even if that perfection is so beyond our grasp and comprehension. So the Simani HaSeder are there to get us to think, yes, that there is a memory mnemonic. They help us to remember the order of the Seder. They help us prepare. But they also help us to accept the fact that there is order even in what? There is order even in chaos. That even that which appears to be so exceptionally random is only random through our lens of human intellect. But in the divine scheme of things, in the divine landscape, everything follows a perfect Seder. And perhaps, again, there's maybe only one night out of the year that we could actually appreciate that, and that's Pesach. Because Pesach is an incredible, almost like panoramic view of life. What do you have on Pesach? Right, think about it. Pesach, you have victory. You have adversity. You have loss. You have birth. You have every single life event is somehow captured in the panoramic view of Pesach. And yet again, we know that so much of the beginning of Shmos is devoted to the fact that the Jews feel that they are the victims of universal chaos. So on this night, we come together and we say, often, we don't understand the order of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's universe. And it really leaves us scratching our head. And sometimes it hurts, and sometimes it upsets us, and sometimes it boggles our mind, and sometimes it even leads us to be angry with HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. But at the end of the day, there's a Seder. Even in the chaos, there's a Seder. Let me share with you one last approach. And I have to warn you, that number four is going to forever change your Pesach experience. So if you like the Pesach you've had until now, you you could take a piece of kugel, you might want to leave, right? But I'm telling you, this piece is so exceptional that it'll fundamentally alter the way you understand what's going on here. So this is from a Haggadah Yachel Yisrael. I quoted it in our last shir as well. A Haggadah with the commentary of Rav Yisrael Meir Lau. Rav Lau was the former chief rabbi of Israel. He's currently the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. And he wrote a number of different sram. One of the sram he wrote is a commentary on the Haggadah. It's an exceptional Haggadah. You can't buy it here in America. Somebody put together an abridged form, also called Yachel Yisrael, but they cut out all the good stuff. And it's like a little paperback. But in Eretz Yisrael, you could buy it here. So look what he writes over here. Look at his introduction. Simani HaSeder, HaSeder L'Chai Adam. The Seder, right? The Simani HaSeder, the signs of the order of the Seder, are really almost like the landmarks, the road markers for life. Misimani Lel HaSeder, Yecholim Anu Lilmot Ulahapik Musar Heskel, Velo Rak LePesach, Elagam L'Chol Yemos Hashana. So Rav Lau here does something amazing. He says, the truth is, in order to appreciate the Rav Lau, let's give one word, one sentence of introduction. What Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are to us as individuals, Pesach is to us as a people. Right? What do Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur represent? What does it represent? Right? Renewal. Right? New starts. New beginnings. Yes, there's an element of judgment, but the element of judgment is ultimately what paves the way for the new beginning. That's the beauty of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. You get to start again. Well, what Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur do for us as an individual, Pesach does for us as a people. It is our national time of renewal. Therefore, Rabbi Lau's real premise is that what unfolds at the Seder night is not simply about Pesach. What is it about? It's a blueprint for life. It's a blueprint for life. You want to know how to live well, how to live a meaningful life? Look at the Seder. The Seder creates the paradigm, it creates the framework, not just for Pesach, but really for life. So watch this. He says, now he goes through the different Simani HaSeder. I'm telling you, it's astounding. First, he groups them in units or in pairs. Kadesh Urchatz. Kadesh Urchatz. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu La'adam. Im Rotze Ata Lehis Kadesh. Kayim Urchatz. So Rav Lau says, Kadesh means what? Right? Don't say Kiddush. Right? Kadesh, blessing. But Kiddusha means holiness, right? Right. Ultimately, through separation, holiness. So Rav Lau understands that. Rav Lau understands that almost to be like the guiding light. What do we want more than anything in life? What do we want? It's a good question to ask ourselves. What do we want? We had one request in life. God give you one wish, right? What is it?
Connection.
Connection. Right. Let's use a different word than connection. Holiness. Kedusha. Where do we know this from? David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Achos sha'alti me'is Hashem osa avakesh. David HaMelech says, God, I have one request. What's my one request? Shifti beveis Hashem koyim echayai. I want to be with you. I just want to be close with you. So the Malbim asks David HaMelech, that's your only request? Now, if you know anything about David HaMelech, how would you categorize David HaMelech's life? Right? Complex, you're being nice, right? Ridiculously challenging, right? Ridiculously fraught with every single problem possibly imaginable, right? From problems in relationships to problems with children to problems with people. I mean, David HaMelech suffered terribly. He really had, out of all of our biblical figures, probably next to Eov, David HaMelech really comes in a very close second. So the Malbim says, David HaMelech, that's all. You have one request from God to dwell. What about shalom between your children? What about shalom with your wives? What about shalom in your kingdom? Like, why, how, what about parnosa? What about right? How could that be the only thing? So the Malbim says something amazing. Because David HaMelech understood something that so often escapes us, which is that when you have a good connection with God, let me say it differently, life will never be perfect. Perfection is not found in this world. If you're waiting for the perfect life, you better get comfortable, right? Because it does not come for any of us. There's no perfection in this world. We always have our problems, we always have our difficulties, we always have our challenges. Sometimes they're greater, sometimes they're amplified, sometimes they're a little bit less, but life is never perfect. So David HaMelech says, you know what? If you have a connection with God, if Kadosh Baruch Hu, if I'm shifty b'beis Hashem, if I am good with you, if I'm connected, if I'm tight with you, everything else falls into place. A person who has a strong relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam, somehow, some way, it doesn't mean everything's perfect. It doesn't mean you come home and, you know, Ed McMahon is standing there with his big publisher's clearinghouse check on your doorstep saying, thank you for having a relationship with God. Are you? No, there's still, you still have all of your life problems. But somehow, you know how to deal with them. Somehow you find the inner fortitude and strength to be able to weather whatever the storms and vicissitudes of life may be. That's what David HaMelech was saying. Shifti b'leis Hashem koy mechai, God, give me kedusha, give me holiness, which stems from a connection with you, and I'm confident that I could weather any other life storm. So says Rabbi Lau, how do we begin to see money? How do we begin to say there with one word? What is it? Kadesh. Because what we're doing is, you know, it's in any life endeavor, whenever you want to accomplish something in life, how do you have to start? What do you start with? Okay, plan, preparation, good answer. Right? Before, more basic. Okay, a goal. You have to know where you want to get to. That's the first step in any life endeavor. Where do I want to get to? What's the goal? When I have a clearly defined goal, then what? Then I could create the plan how to get to. You see, this, by the way, is the biggest problem that so many of us have in life. That we embark on things, but we don't really know where we actually want to end up. And so if you don't know where the finish line is, if you don't know what you're working towards, what inevitably ends up happening is, over time, you get derailed. You get derailed, because if you're not in a clear key, that's why the word kavana comes from what word? Kivun. Right? Direction. Direction, the most important thing in life is I need to know where I'm going. Now, by the way, that doesn't mean I need to have one goal for the next 50 years. It could be I know where I want to get to today. Right? Tomorrow, we'll figure tomorrow out tomorrow. I don't want to get to this year. But you always have to have, so therefore, center by Lao, if the Seder night is supposed to be a cathartic, transformative experience, the first thing I need is what? My goal. Where am I going? What am I trying to accomplish? And the answer is Kaddish. Kaddish. You want to know where I'm headed to? I want Kiddusha. I'm going to Achal Sha'alti Me'ez Hashem Osa Avakish Shifti Be'ez Hashem Koy Mechayai. I need to find holiness, which stems from a connection with God, because I know with all of my heart that everything else in life flows from that. So what's the first? Yes?
Is it fair to deduce from what you're saying that you can encounter any
I don't know if I would use the word clarity. I will say you will find the inner resolve to be able to deal with it. Right? Clarity is already a bigger step. Right? Halalai, we should have clarity. Clarity usually means answers. Right? But if you are good with God, if you are strong with God, if you have a sense of Kiddusha, you have the inner tools to be able to deal with any life situation. Again, it doesn't mean you're going to avoid those life situations, but you can deal with them. So what's the first step in acquiring Kiddusha? Look what he says. First step? Urchatz. Urchatz. Urchatz means washing. So what is it? What's the pshat? Look what he says. Alecha lishmor al nikayon kapayim e'oshek u'migezel. So he says the first thing you have to be careful with is what? Literally, wash your hands of what? Any wrongdoing. Now here he's specifically talking about financial impropriety. Right? Cheating others, stealing from others. B'lashon ha'kasuv erchatz b'nikayon kapayim. So I think we can globalize this a little bit. So what is Rabbi Lau saying? The first step in Kiddusha is washing away the impurities. Let me give you a very, alright, it's not the prettiest example, but it makes the point. Right? A person becomes tame. A person becomes ritually impure, come in contact with a corpse. Alright, so I'm tame. So now I have to go to the mikvah. So I go into the mikvah, and I'm dunking up and down, but it just happens to be that I'm holding a dead rodent in my hand. Whatever, it's a hobby. Right? So I am holding it in my hand, I'm dunking, I'm going up, down, mamish with such kavana, it's wonderful. Am I tahor? No. Why? So the Gemara has an expression of tovel v'sheretz biyado, right? That a person immerses, but the sheretz, you know, the source of impurity, the rodent is in my hand. So you could dunk in the mikveh as many times as you want, But until what? Until I separate myself from the source of impurity, that immersion will do absolutely nothing. So what Rav Lau is saying is the following. You know what the first step in Kiddusha is? It's washing away the impurities of life. But remember, there's a step that precedes that. But there's really a step before Orchatz, which is... Sorry? Go, good. Kiddush also, right? Sorry?
Let go of the rodent.
Let go of the rodent. Right? Well said. Namely, we'll call that introspection. The first step in Kaddish is really looking, who am I? And this is a very difficult process. For many of us, it's a grueling process. It's an uncomfortable process. And the truth is, it's something that many of us avoid any way that we can. Because when you have to sit down and really look into yourself, it is inevitable that we will find things that I'm not happy with. Find things that I don't like. And sometimes, at least initially, we even find more negativity than good. Now, that's not really true because there's always more good than negativity, but that's what we find sometimes upon initial investigation. So yeah, first step in acquiring Kedusha is introspection, which leads to identification of negative attributes, traits, or qualities. And then the next step is purging myself of those things, letting go of the rodent, right? So again, it's introspection that leads to identification. Once I've identified the things that are wrong, then I have the ability to what? To what? Urchatz, to wash them away. So Kaddish, it's what we were all working towards. We want Kiddusha, first step, Urchatz. But it's not just simply washing away. But what is it? You have to first introspection, identification, and then ultimately finding the courage to wash away that negativity. No, because remember, you always need to start with the goal. Right? The only way that Urchatz gets started is if I know what I'm working towards. So what's next? What's next? Karpas Yachatz. Look what he says, and this is amazing. Umamshech, v'omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'adam. So God goes on and he says to man the following. Gam im ein cha ashir ubal nechasim. Even if you don't have a lot in life, ve'ein lecha ela karpas, and all you have is what? Right? You have a little potato, you have a little celery, a little parsley, mine yirakos v'lo basar v'dagi. Maybe you have very little in life. Nevertheless, kayim ba'atzmicha yachatz. Even if you only have a little, what should you do? What is yachatz? Yachatz is when we split the mil matzah. So even if all you have in life is a little bit of karpas, make sure to share it with someone else. Because as little as you have, there's one thing that's for sure, which is someone else has less. Even if all you have is some karpas, believe me, someone else doesn't even have that. Chatzeya says, split it in half. The chaluk eshelchay mazulas, and share what you have with someone else. Imisha afilu karpas elo. So you see the progression? So what just happened? So the quest for Kiddusha begins with what? Introspection, identification, washing away of impurities. But Kiddusha cannot be found if it is a solitary pursuit. See, this is the greatest misnomer. People think that the way to become holy is working on yourself. And that is the initial stage. But holiness can only be found if what? If you're willing to connect and help those around you. So immediately after the introspection, identification, purging of personal life negativity, you have to reach out to those around you. And even so, I only have a little, I don't have enough to go around. You don't have to give away the bulk of it. You don't have to give away 90% of it. You give away 10% of it. But whatever you have, as little as it may be, someone else has less. And so if you want to work towards Kiddusha, Karpas, even if you only have a little, Yachatz, split it and share it. Yes. Right, so it's a very valid point. I could see the argument that maybe Karpas Yachatz maybe should even come before Urchatz. I think he's saying in a pure model, one should start with introspection. What you're advocating is what the Sefer Achinuch advocates, which is that often it's difficult to become a good person. Sometimes you have to do good things, and good things help you transform yourself into a good person. I'm sorry?
You can start working on yourself, but if you don't take it to the next level by helping others, you know, the
Excellent. Excellent, right? So you're suggesting that it's right. It's not the pshat that you finish Orchatz and then move on to Karpas Yachatz. It's almost like in conjunction. Beautiful. What's next? Magid Rachza. Magid Rachza. So watch this. Es shehutal alecha kodem, lihios niki kapayim, alecha lo rak lekayim ba'atzmecha, elegam lihios magid zos libnei besecha, liyaladecha, v'chol tzeetzaecha, v'chol hanesurim lahash ba'asecha. So here's what's amazing. Rachza sounds very similar to what? Urchatz. Sukkot Rabbi Lau says something amazing. So now we've spoken about working on ourselves. We've spoken about helping others. It's if you believe in something, if you have ideals and beliefs, it's so exceptionally important to transmit them. So whether we transmit them to our families, to our friends, to our communities, to whoever is going to listen, it's not just simply enough to have the belief. You have to find the ability to transmit the belief. That's contained in the phrase Magid. Magid means what? To tell over. So Magid, you have to transmit what? Rachza. You have to transmit the ideal of Urchatz. You have to transmit this ideal of introspection, identification, and ultimately, again, purging of life negativity. It's not enough to do it for yourself, but you have to transmit that value to those around you as well. Next. Motzi, yes. Right, right, because the truth is, you can't be an effective transmitter of any idea or ideal if you yourself don't embody it. 100%. Yes?
Is it also the Sorni Rava Asiyas Kod, the Orchatz
before? 100%. 100%. Which is the Orchatz before the Karpas. Right, right. Very important point as well, which actually ties into the Tovel V'Sheretz Biyado idea. You have to first distance yourself from that which is negative before you embark on the journey of good. Excellent point. Motzi matzah. Watch this. Matzah, so this is a real twist. So matzah, right, matzah means matzah. So Rabbi Lau writes, matzah, bilshono shel hanavi Yeshayahu, hi riv. The word matzah is also used to mean machlokes, to mean discord, to mean dissension, to mean fighting. So watch this. Hey, Luriv, okay, he quotes the pasuk, va'alecha lihios, Motzi matzah. Lahotzi ulesalik esharif v'amodon v'lifol shalom. So Rabbi Lau says, you could work on yourself, right? Urchatz. You can go ahead and share with others. Karpas yachatz. You could go ahead and transmit the ideals. Magid rachza. But the only way that people thrive is when they are in an atmosphere of shalom. If you don't exist within an atmosphere of peace, then all of the work that you will do on yourself, all of the work that you will, all the things you will try to transmit to others, will simply fall flat. Because without shalom, without peace, without some level of life harmony, all of these other things don't have a chance to germinate. They don't have a chance to grow in an organic fashion. So therefore, what's the next step? Motzi matzah. So motzi matzah means what? It's astounding. Remove the discord. Remove the discord. Identify the pockets of discord in your life. And we all have them, right? Whether it's with family, whether it's with friends, whether it's in relationships, whatever it may be. Identify the sources and pockets of discord. Motzi. And find a way to resolve them. You know, one of the reasons why we have such difficulties solving sometimes interpersonal disputes is because we say to ourselves, you know what, like I'm never going to be friends with that person, so there's no point in trying. Remember, the goal in life is not to be friends with everyone. We use the word friend very, very loosely today. Right? I'm a big believer. Nobody should really have more than 5 friends. Because the truth is, it's impossible to forge a meaningful relationship. You can't carry on more than 5 meaningful relationships in your life. It's not possible. You know, it's like in the Facebook age, you know, everybody has like 3,000 friends. Right? So you have no idea who 3/4 of these people are, but they're my friends, right? You friended me, right? Is that the right lashon? Right? They come to the shir. I'm shooting myself in the foot with this. I know, right? But we use this word so you have to think. Sometimes in life, the goal is not to be friends with someone. Sometimes the goal is simply coexistence. that we could be in the same room and not avoid each other. That we could bump into each other and it's not going to be awkward. We're never going to be friends. The truth is, I don't really want to be friends with him. Not talking to anybody here, right? I don't have an interest. It's okay. You do your thing. I'll do my thing and show nice. And that's okay. That's okay. You know, we often have this ideal that you have to reach kamocha means you have to love every person. No one loves every person. No one. I mean, some tzaddikim love every people, but regular people don't love every person. The goal is to be able to coexist. That's a goal. And by the way, lest you think that's not an accomplishment, that's a major accomplishment. Imagine having a life where you have no discord, right? Where you have no awkwardness with anyone. That's a major accomplishment. So that says Rabbi Lau, it's wonderful to do all of these things. But unless you create an atmosphere of shalom, they will not thrive. So therefore, the next step is motzi matzah. Extract the matzah. Extract the discord, which again requires me to identify the pockets of discord in my life and create a plan of action to be able to address them. Next, marur korech shulchan orech. Watch this. Gam im ata atuf v'korech halila b'mar. So let me give you a word of background on this. Matzah in the times of the Gemara. All right. Matzah in the times of the Gemara did not look like the matzah we have today. I'm going to give you the perfect proof to that. You ever want to think, we're going to sit at the Seder in a little bit more than a week, and what's going to happen? We're going to make this korech sandwich, this filo sandwich, right? So we're going to go ahead and we're going to put in the we have the matzah, we have the mar, a little bit of charoses, and what happens the moment you take a bite? It's like a churban, right? The whole thing literally falls everywhere. So everyone thinks, like, who the heck came up with this idea? Right? Who decided this was a sandwich? It's not a sandwich, it's a catastrophe. I mean, it doesn't, and by the way, take it a step further. What did Hillel have in there? Hillel had a carpet, so imagine having a piece of meat right in there. You think it all falls apart. Now, just a little bit of lettuce, imagine you have a lamb chop in there, and then everything. But you have to understand something. Here's what's interesting. In the times of the Gemara, their matzos were essentially probably what we would today call a wrap. A wrap. A lafa. Right? So you have to understand. So what does it mean? It says, Hillel was korech. The word korech means what? The word korech means what? It doesn't mean sandwich. A kricha is actually a wrap. So what would Hillel do? Hillel would have his lettuce, and he would have his lamb, and he essentially ate what? A shawarma, right? Hillel had a shawarma. So now you think about it that way. Now Pesach already takes on a totally different identity. We're having shawarma, and it's for dessert. Mamash, that's the, right? So now that's the kricha. That's why it's called korech, because Hillel literally wrapped it up. That's why it's the only way that the sandwich makes sense, because to think that Hillel would actually eat it, you can't physically eat it as a sandwich, but he wrapped it all up. So if you understand that korech doesn't mean a sandwich, korech means to wrap. So watch this. Marur korech shulchan orech. Listen to this. Gam im ata atuf v'karuch chalila b'marur v'chayecha meririm re'eina lahakbid az gam az al hashulchan orech al hashulchan orech hayudi. Listen to this. We all have marur in our lives. Everybody has marur. Some people have a little bit of marur. Some people have a lot of marur. That's the nature of human existence. But there are times in life where the maror seems to be so pervasive that no matter where I look, no matter where I turn, it feels like maror. You know what it's like? It's like being enveloped or wrapped in maror. So Rabbi Lau writes, sometimes life is not just maror, but it's maror korech. I feel not just that there's some life bitterness, that there's some life difficulty, that there's some struggles, but literally, I feel wrapped in it. I feel that wherever I turn, I experience it. No matter what I do, I can't get away from it. I am wrapped up in maror. So what do we do? How do you approach this? If chas v'shalom life is maror korech, so the answer is shulchan orech. That the job of a Jew is that even when life is difficult, right? Even when it's not just a little bit of maror, but literally I'm enveloped in maror. No matter where I turn, it's maror. What's my job? Shulchan aruch. It doesn't mean to eat, right? It means what? Shulchan aruch. It means to maintain a commitment and fidelity to God, even when life is difficult. It's easy to be on good terms with God when life is going my way. The challenge is when there's maror, and the greater challenge is when it's maror korech. The job of a Jew is, no matter how much maror there is in life, shulchan orech, shulchan aruch. It's not just simply a fidelity to halacha, we're talking about a relationship. Like in any life relationship. The true testament to any life relationship is what? How does it hold up when circumstances become difficult? Right? So relationships that simply crumble were not good relationships from the beginning because they couldn't withstand the stress of life. Our relationship with God is no different. To say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I love you, everything's wonderful, when life is going fine, is no great chap. The greatest accomplishment is even when it's maror korech, even when I'm enveloped with maror, shulchan aruch, I maintain a fidelity and commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he goes on, along this same theme, tzafun barech, right? Tzafun, who HaKadosh Baruch Hu had tzafun v'nistar me'en kol, continuing on this theme. Tzafun means what? Hidden. Again, referring to God, that so often in life we look around, and we try to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we try to locate God, and what happens? We can't find Him. Unless you think you're alone. Even David HaMelech said what? Keili, keili, lama azaftani. Even the great David HaMelech, there were times in life where he felt that God had forsaken him. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu simply had left him hanging. That God was not on his side. It is only normal that there are circumstances in life where God is tzafun. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is simply hidden. God is obscured. I can't find him. I can't see him. Nothing. But even in those situations, what's my mandate? Barich. Even when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hidden, I have an obligation to what? To bless him. Now, bless him doesn't say, you know, mean, thank you, sir, may I have another. You know, it doesn't mean, please, keep it coming, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Baruch represents that connection. Baruch represents that idea that even when God is hidden, even when he seems to be hiding from me, it is my obligation to go and to seek him out. And lastly, Hallel Nirtza. The Jew who is able to keep singing, the Jew who is able to say Hallel, HaHallel Kazeh, Levarich Es Habori Gam B'Tinoim Ka'ela, Shamarur Korech, the Jew who is able to maintain a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he or she does not stop singing, even in the midst of all of these circumstances, such a relationship with God is what? Is Nirtza, is truly desired and accepted by the Ribon HaShalom. So what comes out is something absolutely astounding. These little simani haseder, which so often we glance over, gloss over, right? These simani haseder, which of course serve as a memory tool for us to remember the order. The same simani haseder, which are there to give us a couple of moments of last minute preparation before the cathartic transformative event of the seder, these little simani haseder create a blueprint for life. If you want Kiddusha, if you want Kaddish, if you want the connectedness with God, let's just run through them again. Urchatz, introspection, identification, purging of all life negativity. Karpas Yachatz, even if you have a little bit in life, make sure you share it with others. Magid Rachza, it's not enough to have ideals. You have to learn how to transmit those ideals. Motzi Matza, but in order for all these positive movements, life movements, to be able to grow and to be nurtured, they need an atmosphere of shalom. Identify the machlokes, neutralize the machlokes, try to go ahead and mend those broken relationships. Marur korech shulchan orech. Sometimes life is not just a little bit difficult. Sometimes life is exceptionally difficult. Sometimes I feel enveloped by difficulty. I'm sandwiched by all the life difficulty, even in those situations. Shulchan aruch. Maintain a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tzafon, but so often God seems obscured, seems gone, seems like He left the building and I'm here all alone. Even in those situations, Baruch. Keep praying, keep davening, keep learning, keep doing, keep pursuing Him, even if it sometimes feels that He is fleeing from us. Hallel, no matter what happens in life, we always have to maintain the ability and the disposition to sing. Because as difficult as things may be, there is always bracha, there is always blessing, there's always beauty in our lives. Nirtza. And if we're able to do all of this, then we know that the way we are living our lives is truly acceptable and desired by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Nirtza ultimately links back to the beginning. The way we know that it's desired by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, accepted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is that we will be able to attain that much sought after Kiddusha. So we should hope that Amir Hashem, as we come to the Seder in a week and a half, that we should be Zocha, A, to prepare too should be zocha to have a successful Seder as evidenced by our ability to transform ourselves. And halavai, we should emerge from the Seder with not just a wonderful Seder experience, but with a new lease on life. Okay.